The government of Lebanon is imposing unprecedented limits on refugees it takes in from Syria. Since the conflict began in Syria some 4 years ago, more than 1 million refugees have poured into Lebanon, which is now requiring that Syrians coming into Lebanon have valid passports and meet other criteria. Turkey, another major destination for Syrians, is doing the opposite, granting refugee status to Syrians who are living there. But ongoing violence continues to drive this refugee crisis, and humanitarian problems continue to mount. Brian Hansford is a spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR. Brian, would you start off by telling us about the tremendous influx of Syrians who have fled their country? If we look at the map, there aren't that many options for where the Syrians can go. Could you give us a visual of where they're headed and in what numbers?
The real heartrending situation is that many of these people have been forced to move because of the conflict, you know, up to 12 or more times inside Syria. You know, we're talking over 3.2 million refugees in the region, but we're also talking over 12 million people inside Syria, internally displaced. So these refugees, they're at their wits' end, and it's desperation that forced them the final journey after they've moved from village to village, from their home villages to other villages, seeking safety. Finally, the last resort is to try and cross the border.
So given the numbers that are coming to Lebanon alone, and if you look at the map, you see how enormous Syria is compared to Lebanon itself. It's pretty amazing that Lebanon could absorb this number. How are they living there, and how is Lebanon able to take care of them?
Well, mostly they're living amongst the poorest of the poor Lebanese. They're in 1,700 what we call informal settlements, and we're talking about disused factories, disused hotels, pieces of vacant land where they've pitched tents and various sort of shelters that they've made and that we and our partners have supplied to them. So there's an immense strain on the resources of Lebanon, and that's why we as UNHCR and our UN and other partners as well have been advocating for more international solidarity with the authorities of Lebanon, with Jordan, with Turkey and with the other countries in terms of both financial assistance and in terms of resettlement support as well.
So you're calling for the international community to step forth. There are countries that are accepting refugees. Notably, we should say some of the Persian Gulf countries and the most wealthy in the Arab world are not. Are there countries that you're right now targeting to try and get them to take some of the refugees from Syria?
You know, the head of my organization, the UNHCR, has said, Antonio Guterres has said, you know, Syria is the defining humanitarian challenge of our times. We estimate that around 10% of this Syria refugee population of 3.2 million are acutely vulnerable. And those are the numbers we are looking at for resettlement overseas.
You're saying vulnerable, which made them leave Syria, or vulnerable because they've left Syria?
Vulnerable because they've left Syria. That we're also talking, you know, survivors of torture, refugees with serious medical conditions, women left alone with several children to care for and without family support. I mean, just to take one example, I was struck, you know, when I was in Lebanon in July and August of 2014. You know, we'd go to these informal refugee camps. I was struck by the amount of children's laundry, you know, little girls' dresses and pants drying on these impromptu clotheslines, you know, on the sides of roads, on fences, etc. And so we're talking, you know, one of the most vulnerable, of course, are these women left alone with their children.
So how do you convince countries, especially some of the wealthiest countries in the Arab bloc, to take refugees where they haven't as yet?
Well, we've had financial support, certainly from Kuwait and other countries in the Arab bloc, and this has been extremely welcome. The war is going into its fifth year. There is no end in sight, and we're talking, you know, knock-on effects of further impoverishing regional countries. We're talking about knock-on political instability effects as well. And so the international community really needs, you know, to continue to step up to the plate.
What are the knock-on effects that you see? I mean, it's bad enough that we have millions of people who are crossing the border with no place to go, no place to live, and no idea how long they'll be in the countries where they are ending up. What's the rest of the fallout that you're seeing?
We're talking about human smuggling, people trafficking, criminal networks getting involved in people trafficking. If borders are controlled, then of course desperate people seek more desperate means. Nobody chooses to be a refugee. These are desperate people trying desperate measures to seek safety for their family, for their loved ones, for themselves.
Brian, what do you know about these ghost ships, speaking about desperate measures? This is where traffickers have in some cases abandoned ships full of refugees trying to reach parts of the Mediterranean, for instance, Italy, and in some cases these ships being left without a crew.
Well, I mean, we're talking about traffickers, human traffickers, people spending thousands of dollars, people, you know, fleeing Turkey, for example, and handing over the last of their savings, you know, the very last amount of money or jewelry, whatever that they have, to people smugglers, to traffickers. For these ships, and then, as you said, and then, you know, they go into these ships, and then these ships are left drifting. And that's one of the illustrations, A, of how desperate the situation is, and B, of course, as well, if borders are increasingly controlled, so people feel that they have no choice but to resort to hiring these traffickers, to passing money over, because they have no legitimate means to find safety.
Up until this point, the United States, which is known for accepting thousands of refugees, tens of thousands of displaced people every year, the U.S. has only taken in 300 of the more than 3 million Syrian refugees. Why is that? And do you expect that to change this year?
Yes. I mean, we've certainly, you know, we've got a very strong relationship with, the State Department. And certainly the U.S. now has a commitment it's an open-ended commitment, if you like. In terms, we have to look at the broader situation regarding the U.S. as well. The U.S. is the largest funder of humanitarian assistance for the Syria crisis. The U.S. is our biggest supporter as the UN Refugee Agency. And also the U.S. is certainly one of the most committed countries in terms of looking at the issue of resettlement. We've put forward, you know, thousands of names to the U.S. and we expect the U.S. to accept, you know, an increasing number of Syrians as the months and years go on.
Of course, the United States is concerned that some of the people who come over might be terrorist threats.
Well, I mean, the U.S., though, I mean, you know, every government has the right to not only regulate its borders, as I've mentioned, but also to, you know, regulate the people who come in terms of the Department of Homeland Security and of course, the Department of Populations, Refugees and Migration, who we work very closely with at the State Department. And so there is legislation, there are regulations in place which will screen people. But in terms of UNHCR, we work very closely with the Populations, Refugees and Migration of the State Department. And we have put forward names of the most vulnerable of the vulnerable for resettlement. And in terms of global resettlement, the U.S. every year resettles more refugees globally than any other country. That's around 75,000.
Okay. Brian Hansford, spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you very much.